Welcome to the latest edition of the Future of Business Energy podcast for Empower Business Solutions Energy HQ. In this podcast, we will discuss the latest announcements from the government around the green recovery, drill down into what we know about policy and infrastructure change so far, and discuss what we would like to see later this year in terms of policy and incentives for businesses, whether this will be a roadmap to net zero. We will also provide actionable advice on the steps businesses can be taking to turn today's changes into long-term net zero opportunities, as well as the businesses that are doing it well. We are delighted to welcome Michael Holder, Deputy Editor of Business Green, as well as business energy experts Stuart Beasley and Michael Byrne from Empower Business Solutions. Thank you to everyone joining us today. It's certainly an interesting time for the energy sector and the sustainability agenda. Let's start by looking at the most recent government announcements around the green recovery. What do we think? What was good or missing? And what would we like to see later in the year? Michael Holder, if I could come to you first.
I think there's a lot to welcome. I mean, first of all, it's quite clear and probably unusual in terms of previous economic crises that we've actually got a government that's come out and said, and a lot of businesses, and there's been a lot of consumers as well, there's been widespread consensus, the need for a green recovery to put environmental policy and investments at the forefront of their recovery plans. And there was certainly a lot of good rhetoric on that from the government. So that's positive, certainly, and something we probably haven't seen before. And certainly some good announcements focusing on green homes and energy efficiency. Some good policy there, which is much needed. You know, it's been long been argued that, you know, investing in insulation and better energy efficient buildings is a really good way of not only reducing emissions, but saving consumers and businesses money. And it's a no regrets investment. You know, it's almost guaranteed returns from investing in measures that cut emissions from homes and buildings. But so that was good to see. Also good to see some announcements and support for research and development, green aviation, or direct air capture for emissions and CCUS, carbon capture and storage. These sort of things are, you know, crucial and important, but kind of a lot more long-term. I think perhaps where there might be concerns are always there's going to be calls for more ambition and more clarity from the government over its policies. And that is still probably yet to emerge. And I think COVID-19 has probably pushed that back a little bit, but the government's been in, you know, Boris Johnson's been prime minister for a year now, the government in place. We've had a net zero target for a year now. And I think companies right across different sectors are calling out for, you know, much clearer policy clarity. We've got the 2050 net zero goal. How are we going to get there? What's the roadmap? I think examples of that would be energy white paper. The energy industry, I think, has long been awaited by businesses. I think there was hope that it might come out this year. It's now looking increasingly like that might even be pushed into next year. The latest stuff I think we've heard from government that, you know, they're looking to publish, in their words, sort of well ahead of COP26, which of course is in November, a year in November 2021. But that would suggest that, you know, maybe it's going to emerge next year. Another is the heat decarbonisation strategy, again, crucial for the energy industry. It's one of the hardest two areas of the economy to cut emissions from. You know, most of the country's homes and businesses rely on gas for heating their homes and cooking food and that sort of thing. So it's really crucial to find a way of how are we going to decarbonize that? Are we going to rely on hydrogen? Are we going to use heat pumps? Is it, you know, other technologies? I think it'll probably be a combination of those things, but really, you know, industry and developers are looking for some clarity on that. So I think those, you know, it's not necessarily about more money always in recovery measures and stuff that's been announced. It's also just about fine-tuning that policy and giving businesses some clarity. And it's not there yet. And of course, the Committee on Climate Change made that quite clear in its recent progress update to Parliament a couple of months ago. You know, it made clear that there are a lot of areas where it's just lacking in terms of policy detail and flesh on the bones of the net zero target. So I think that's really where, you know, government clarity is needed most, more than anything else. And we've got some of that, but it's still not nearly enough.
And Stuart, how about from your perspective?
It was good to see some commitment from government. Investment and stimulus is welcomed by industry, particularly in light of what could be the worst economic impact since the Great Depression. I think there's a few important points here. Transport infrastructure and general employment support in the green sector. And I certainly welcome this, as domestic energy contributes significantly to the carbon footprint, and household energy efficiency developments and the infrastructure upgrades will create work and jobs for business directly and indirectly, especially in the building and services trade and SMEs, which is a huge part of the economy. Let's also not forget that recently government has provided support in the way of the renewable heat incentive and the industrial energy transformation funds. But I don't think all of these necessarily were linked to the green recovery program, but there are other funding schemes out there too, which I support. So in terms of what this announcement does not include, it's certainly light on support for major corporates and energy intensive users. And it's here that I'd like to see more support. But this is my understanding is this is the first phase from a total package of $9.2 billion that the government will invest. And therefore, there is an expectation that there's going to be a follow-up. So I recognise some good intentions here, but I hope there's more to come very soon.
And Michael Byrne, was there anything in particular that you wanted to highlight?
Well, first of all, I'd like to praise the government for making the commitment of $3 billion and part of its green recovery package. I think that was really positive news. What was lacking for me was a little bit of the detail on how that money is to be invested. Businesses, from what they say to us, really crave certainty, a framework of how they can go about and start to plan and invest. And of course, we talk to a lot of businesses who haven't really started their net zero journey. So from that perspective, they really need somebody to hold a hand and produce a roadmap and a set of frameworks and guidelines which they can follow.
On that, what do you think should be prioritised to support the larger, more energy-intensive business community?
So at Empower, what we've been seeing, go back to the, if I could call it the pre-COVID era, which I guess is prior to March, private sector businesses and public sector organisations declaring ambitions around net zero carbon and declaring climate emergencies. And that's been well documented in the public domain too. So what we've been seeing is real intent from stakeholders across the public and private sector.
And Michael, what are your thoughts?
I think when it comes to energy, I think, again, energy efficiency is critical. You can really achieve a lot by just making sure that the energy that we already produce and use is used much more effectively. And that's going to be a huge and crucial pillar towards delivering net zero. I think that's the first and foremost thing to deal with. You know, it isn't just about how you produce the energy, whether it's from renewables or fossil fuels. It's about making sure that energy is used effectively and as productively as possible. So, of course, that said about investing in home energy efficiency upgrades, insulation, smart technologies like smart meters, making sure as well that as we shift towards electric vehicles, making sure perhaps that we've got houses and homes and infrastructure built for electric vehicles to store that energy during the day when they're driving around and perhaps use it later on in the day when it's connected back to the grid. And homes also can use much more solar power and other energy technology. So that kind of stuff be a lot more efficiently produced. So that's a crucial element of it. But I think beyond that, you've also got to look at manufacturers and heavy industry, which are, of course, high emission, you know, high carbon emitters, and finding ways and supporting these businesses and making the big investments in making sure that their activities are as efficient as possible. And, you know, industries like cement and steel, which are heavily reliant on coal, can move towards greener technologies and greener means of powering their manufacturing, which is going to be a huge challenge. But I think those are probably absolutely critical to get right in terms of the energy sector.
But overall, I think on energy efficiency, I'd like to see some stronger incentives with a support mechanism to improve the building infrastructure efficiency in the UK that really encourages businesses to act. And then I think a big one to help achieve net zero carbon is more financial support to really maximise the availability of the natural assets that an organisation might have at their disposal, particularly for behind the meter renewable generation assets, for example, solar or wind. And a support package should really look to enhance the business case for doing the project and helping to promote that within an organisation so that it's endorsed at senior level and becomes a high priority for that business.
Michael, do you agree?
First of all, what are the incentives via the technologies? I want to know that. There may be specific technologies for specific industries, whether you're retail, whether you're in water, or whether you're in large-scale energy-intensive manufacturing. So they'll be looking for the details of what technologies really apply to them and their business. They need to help with business cases, so policies that really spell out what the cost of these measures are, how the payback, how an ROI is calculated. Many people that we speak to have not yet made energy a board-level discussion, and energy managers, from our experience, really require that support to get their ideas to the board and onto the kind of strategic part of the business plan.
Another key issue, as well as flexibility, grid flexibility, and technology is increasingly in the shift towards software and services that can manage the grid much more effectively. As we shift to a more intermittent forms of energy like renewables, be it from wind and solar, it, you know, and battery storage, there's got to be ways of managing that more effectively to suit needs of the end energy users. And that's going to be a big focus. And, you know, there's technological development and software developers doing a lot of that. So there needs to be a lot of support for that if we're going to be moving away from traditional centralized large power stations reliant on coal or gas or what have you. So that's another very critical area. And I think a lot of businesses are keen to sort of make the most of that kind of technology.
Probably a personal perspective, I'd like to see a bit more rigor around the scope three, really encouraging organizations to strongly consider the environmental impact from their supply chains, particularly where, you know, goods and production processes are sourced and manufactured overseas. And it seems to me that simply reducing your carbon footprint here to only then put that somewhere else in the world doesn't really solve the global carbon problem. It just moves it around. In that sense, we're all in it together, in my view. We are seeing, particularly in some of the major corporates, them impose policy on their supply chain. So to be part of the supply chain, you have to adhere to certain criteria in the procurement processes. And what we're seeing is that's becoming increasingly important in the corporate sector. And that's something that we've been trying to help and support businesses that are part of that supply chain. But we'd like to work with, you know, the major corporate throughout their supply chain to really align that, align potentially strategies and encourage, you know, information sharing and best practice sharing across that supply chain.
Interesting that you raised scope three there, Stuart. Overall, do you think there should be incentives or fines for good or bad business uptake of sustainability measures or for compliance with schemes such as ESOS or SECA? Michael, what's your view?
Well, I think we need the clarity on whether ESOS is staying or going. SECA is a great tool, but has been not uptaken by all. So I think we need a framework and a guideline, first and foremost, is what are going to be the reporting mechanisms. That's absolutely crucial. We need to have confidence as consumers and as a business that the claims and savings that people are making are actually robust and are true. And of course, we absolutely want to highlight good practice, and that should be communicated, you know, throughout industry. And for those that require some more kind of stick rather than carrot, then I think we should be looking at fines, absolutely. This is baked into law. This is happening. So therefore, we need a mechanism that highlights the good practice and brings the kind of bad practice and the laggards into line.
Interesting that it could take a mix of incentives and fines. Michael, what do you think?
I think the traditional view, and it's probably accurate, is that businesses tend to respond much more to incentives, positive measures, and more the carrot than the stick, I suppose. You know, that's not to rule out fines altogether. I think probably that has to be something to use for the businesses that lag behind the most. But of course, it's worth remembering that the biggest stick that could be used against a business not taking its climate efforts seriously or efforts to decarbonize is simply that they're going to run out of road for their business. You know, consumers want companies that are taking climate change seriously, so do other suppliers, and increasingly regulations will benefit those businesses which are much more ambitious.
Stuart, do you agree?
I fundamentally prefer the carrot rather than the stick approach. I also believe people and businesses are aware of the environmental challenges facing the UK and the world and generally want to do the right thing. I think considering the hard time that organizations have had recently, and particularly now under that sort of COVID lockdown era and the post period for the green recovery, I'm just not sure that financial penalties are particularly helpful at this moment. We need businesses to do what they fundamentally do, which is to stay in business, provide jobs, support local economies, and support their supply chains. That said, I don't think businesses are taking up as many of the sustainability measures as they could across all of the different scopes. And we know that, you know, scope three is not directly associated to any incentives or penalties at this point in time. So what I would be keen to see is access to potentially low interest finance. So I think that would help to kickstart some of the projects that businesses have already been considering. And then wider thought on policy around what that means for supply chains and incentives to be potentially endorsed by policy for organizations like ourselves that can help customers to consider their upstream and downstream impacts of their environmental challenges. And I think what happens across other parts of the world can really only be discussed, agreed, and policies put in place at, you know, really senior levels of government and trade, but more locally, encouragement via potential incentives to encourage customers to think about what carbon emissions are involved in their supply chain, I think is really important.
That's interesting. Michael, what do you think?
Sure, yeah. I think there are some crucial incentives that some people are disappointed not to see in government bailouts and support offered to companies in the wake of COVID-19 that were struggling with lockdown measures, including some high carbon companies such as airlines. I think people would have wanted to see the government say, if you're going to receive some money from us, some state money, you should have to achieve certain climate targets or set certain climate science aligned targets, or perhaps even, as some were suggesting, should have to, you know, sign up to the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, TCFDs, which, you know, basically make sure that a company takes account of the risks to its business posed by climate change and the net zero transition, which is a voluntary guidelines. But perhaps if the government had said, you know, if you're going to receive state money, you should actually, you know, you should sign up to this. And it, of course, is in the business's best interest to keep risks in check and make sure that it's, you know, on a pathway that will allow it to continue operating at its best capability over the next three decades.
Interesting that you say that sustainability is in a business best interest. Michael, what do you think the business sentiment is towards net zero and policy at the moment?
Well, we've conducted some research that was actually published in Business Green, which showed that 85% of businesses believe that they have a serious commitment to sustainability, and this should be prioritised for a post-government set of policies and guidelines. So over 90% back a green recovery plan. I think what that's really showing to us is that this is on the agenda. Businesses believe in it. They want to plan for it. And they require that framework and that certainty of the greater detail that we believe that the Energy White Paper is going to provide. Nearly two-thirds, 62%, said that the government should announce new grants or incentives for business to implement sustainability measures. So this really is talking about the next set of detail of that $3 billion in terms of where it's going to be spent and what technologies, whether it be EVs, solar, or whatever, is going to be targeted. And of course, they want to know how they pay for it and how that's going to take forward into their kind of future business plans. One of the things that's been talked about quite a lot is carbon capture and storage and hydrogen, and should this investment be required? And we know from what we see and read in the news that many of our European competitors are already starting to look at technologies such as hydrogen. So the UK PLC, I think it's really important that we get on to this and start planning for 2050.
That's so true. So moving on to how you all think that energy infrastructure is going to have to change to meet net zero and what this means for business. For example, in its most recent future energy scenarios, National Grid ESO said that net zero is achievable, but that the energy system alone cannot deliver it. Industrial and commercial consumers will need high levels of energy efficiency, be able and willing to switch to new technologies and fuels. So Michael, from your point of view, how does the energy infrastructure need to change?
The biggest penalties that companies can face is by missing out on the business opportunities of net zero transition. Even though, you know, of all sectors of the economy, the biggest opportunities and arguably the biggest gains that have been made towards delivering net zero have already happened within the energy sector, much more than, say, in transport or agriculture, for example. It really is at the forefront of everything we do. Now, increasingly, things are being electrified and require energy, and our energy demand in that sense is likely to go up. But as you say, we need to become more efficient with the energy we use as well to try and keep that in check. You know, in terms of delivering a net zero energy system, as I said, I think flexibility is key. If we're going to be having more intermittent forms of renewables, wind and solar on the grid, instead of baseload electricity from centralized power plants that produce their energy through coal, for example, then there needs to be means of storing that energy through battery storage and making sure that energy is sent to areas that need it at the times that need it.
Stuart, how about you?
Improving infrastructure in many ways is about removing some of the barriers that currently exist. And in NPower's recent future report, which included inputs and views from well-known industry experts, they all agreed that to deliver on the UK's net zero carbon targets, the infrastructure upgrades needed to start within the next 5 years. They went on to say that policy certainty, green recovery support, and investment in technology is vital in making this happen. And I guess a few examples here would be support required to transition to a hydrogen economy, particularly in the gas networks, which will help decarbonize heat, and also its potential use in the transport sector too, to this and developing those technologies. And this technology is an emerging technology, so I think a boost, and then making it widespread and affordable, along with access to carbon capture, usage and storage, potentially for the energy intensive users, is really going to help. I think the other key area is electric vehicle charging and vehicle to grid networks, which will need to become commonplace and more accessible to businesses and the UK general public. They will need access to charging points across the UK, and they'll be relying on organisations to implement that, whether that be service stations on the motorways or whether that be, you know, your local supermarket or potentially even areas in sort of the hospitality area, all need to be fitted with charge points to make that more accessible and enable the rollout of electric vehicles. So we've got to think of a time here, not like now where there are relatively small amounts of electric vehicles on the road, but we've got to think of a time where the majority of the population has those electric vehicles and are using vehicle-to-grid networks. And so that infrastructure needs to be in place. I think also grid needs to be prepared for this. They need to be prepared for that decentralized, decarbonized, flexible generation world. And so, you know, a key point for us at Empower, we are already working with organizations to implement electric vehicle charge points as part of their net zero carbon strategy. And typically we are also looking at the capacity headroom that they have at site, and then looking at potential solutions around that. So for example, battery storage combining with electric vehicles and very often solar PV shows the sort of innovation that is going on at organization level to try and help push forward this agenda and make that change to infrastructure. But I think those considerations need to happen at grid level as well.
We need clarity on which technologies we're going to use to get to net zero. There's been a lot of talk about CCS, hydrogen, battery storage and EV, all sorted as technologies that would make the biggest impact on the UK's decarbonisation goals. But also businesses need to have clarity when it comes to resilience. There's been a lot of investment in wind and solar, but of course this supply is intermittent. So that help with flexibility and transacting that to make sure that smaller generators are rewarded, but also that there's no interruption to the UK supply.
And what difference will it make to business?
My view is it will make a huge difference. I think if this is done in the right way, organisations should see a relatively low CapEx impact. So particularly if it's been supported by government, and what we'd like to see is that to be included as part of the green recovery initiatives that the government is continuing to work on. And then all businesses should see are the real financial benefits of those projects that they embark upon as a result of the green recovery program really take effect. And so I guess there's a few things here that businesses might likely see. They should see reduced energy demand taken off the grid as they become more energy efficient, and the energy efficiency schemes really start to make that impact on the demand they're taking off the grid. And also, if they're to deploy renewable generation, then that provides lower cost energy. And also then, not only reduces the energy demand and the import energy, but also helps to avoid the non-commodity costs and levies, which we know can be a sizable proportion of the energy bill. And then where there is renewable generation, any excess energy that is generated, depending on your connection agreement, can be sold back to grid or used for your local community. And all of that can be done via a power purchase agreement. And so where storage and renewable assets have been installed, that will also increase a business's energy resilience, so less resilience on the grid. And we've recently seen, only last year, the result of disruption to supply. And, you know, we've had customers where actually they've had to destroy their stock and their production as a result of not being resilient and as a result of that being interrupted. And that cost over £1 million. So the resilience part of this is really important.
This is where I think businesses will need an energy partner to help them guide through what is available out there. Businesses such as NHS or data centers will require different types of solutions and different types of technologies. Many of the infrastructure that they have currently on site might be old, might be not fit for purpose to be net zero, such as diesel gensets. So to help with that planning, with that portfolio, and achieving net zero, a plan needs to be targeted with the right technology. And the right technology for the right industry, and an energy partner who's going to be there for the long term and can help the choices that businesses will need to make.
Michael, anything to add on that?
Businesses, obviously, every business needs energy. They need to secure energy from somewhere. And they're, you know, increasingly we've seen in the last few years, businesses that have a public face want to be seen as businesses that are supplying or using 100% renewable energy. So that's the kind of supplier they're going for. But as we go forward, businesses are going to expect more from their energy supply. They're going to expect, hopefully, lower bills if their energy use becomes more efficient. And that's a way that they can, you know, cut costs to their bottom line by introducing energy efficiency measures through various means. But they're also going to be introducing, as I say, electric vehicle fleets and, you know, looking at ways that can marry up with their energy use.
Over the last few months, we've seen many different businesses commit to net zero or ambitious decarbonisation pledges. Michael, have there been any good or bad examples of business pledges that you've covered in Business Green?
I think if businesses and suppliers and stakeholders and consumers are aware that you're making efforts as a business to shift towards net zero, it's not necessarily going to happen tomorrow or overnight. It's not an easy thing to do. But if you're aware of the challenges that you're facing, then it buys you more time with consumers. And I think it buys you a reasonable sense of that this company is trying to do its best. Whereas if it can happen with some companies, they set a target, but it can appear a bit as greenwash if you haven't got the realistic assumptions behind it that are needed to get there. I think what we have seen is over the last year and in recent months, particularly companies such as BP, obviously a major oil company, has previously faced a lot of criticism. You know, it's an oil company. It's going to face criticism from climate campaigners and perhaps being a bit of a laggard in shifting its business or recognizing that it's going to have to change in order to be part of the future net zero economy. But we have seen in the last few months is that it's set a net zero target. It's also said it's going to cut its oil production by 40% over the next decade, which is quite a landmark and remarkable announcement for any oil company to have made. And part of the reasoning behind that, the company said, is because they're worried about, you know, attracting the best minds of a younger generation that is more climate aware, concerned. And also, of course, it is about suppliers and regulation and other businesses. It's just a recognition that that's the market reality we're in now. So that's a genuinely ambitious target that they've set, and not everyone's going to be convinced by it because it's an oil company. But at the same time, I think a lot of people are recognizing that BP is actually serious about changing its business. Not there yet, but it's going to happen, and it's going to buy a lot of a goodwill amongst, you know, governments and other businesses in doing that. But it is nevertheless one of the biggest oil companies in the world. Whereas I think, you know, to take it down a much smaller level, there have been announcements from some companies. I think, you know, some supermarkets have said they're going to get rid of plastic bags, for example, and shift instead to use paper bags, but which is all well and good. It sounds on paper, to for want of a better word. But if you ask them, and we have done, you know, where are you sourcing that paper from to make those paper bags? Perhaps it comes from a non-renewable source because it's not sustainable. And then you're actually doing arguably more damage to the climate potentially if you haven't got that kind of basis for the thing you're shifting to sorted out. So you really, it's not easy. There's no easy answers for anything you do to shift your activities. But if you don't make the right, if you don't plan sensibly for announcement you're going to make, make sure that the direction you're going on is properly costed and worked out, you're going to be, you're under scrutiny from consumers more than ever. And it's going to harm your reputation more than it is if you take your time to announce a target that's properly costed and has a proper roadmap behind it. And, you know, like I say, it can buy you goodwill, and people recognize that, you know, people recognize it can't happen overnight, and they recognize that a business is making the effort to change. So I think those are the crucial things, really. It's just to be serious about what you're doing. Set ambitious targets, but make sure you've got the planning sorted behind it. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't look so good.
With that in mind, what do you think the primary and secondary benefits of net zero goals are for businesses?
Yeah, I think we've seen probably a similar thing at a national level. It's been a year since the UK set a net zero target in stone, in statute for 2050. And there may be some uncertainty about how we're going to get there, but it has moved markets. It has said to the world, that's the target date. That's where we're going to get. And instantly, everyone in the country, every business knows where we've got to be in 30 years' time. And they're now thinking, this is what we've got to do to get that. The same applies within a business. If a business says, you know, by 2040, 2030, 2050, we've got to deliver net zero. You know, that sets train in motion, and you've got your staff, hopefully, working towards that goal. So you can then set the best minds in your business towards finding solutions and shifting your activities towards net zero. It also sends a message to your suppliers as well, of course, that if they're going to keep working with you, they need to also make sure their business is aligned with net zero by the same time you are. So, you know, those are the immediate benefits of setting a net zero target. It suddenly sets a clear path, and it sets the train in motion for getting there. It's also, as we mentioned, I mean, in terms of consumers and gaining business and contracts and future commerce, it's just increasingly crucial. Consumers are much more climate aware. They don't, you know, and other businesses are as well. They don't want to be working with a business that's seen as a climate laggard. And also there's a risk element as well. If you're not taking account of where markets are going to be shifting in 30 years' time, then you're not planning ahead for the future. And that's arguably not really managing your business properly. The whole world and the whole economy is going to look very different in 30 years' time. Where does your business fit within that? And if you're not taking consideration of that, then you're in trouble, to be frank. So it sets many, many trains in motion and many important pathways towards delivering that net zero goal.
Michael, do you agree?
The primary benefits for me are all around the commerciality that businesses can achieve. That's starting a revenue stream, making sure that costs, energy costs, are under control, and there's a plan to reduce energy spend in the scheme of lowering carbon emissions. But of course, there are lots of secondary benefits as well. Employee engagement. We know from talking to our business customers how much employees or businesses are consumers in their own rights, but want to be involved and want to have the pride in their business taking a lead when it comes to net zero. We've also seen lots of the technologies such as EV and a real drive to incorporate EV in the future. Businesses are responsible for a lot of vehicles on the road, as we know. So there are groups like EV100 who are really trying to put a framework and encourage the uptake of electric vehicles for business use so that they can electrify their fleet. This is all part of that kind of that the wider kind of secondary benefit to businesses and the economy at large as we transition. And of course, as we do that, there'll be lots and lots of benefits for other people in the supply chain. I think it's really, really important that with the whole net zero 2050, that UK PLC benefits as much as it possibly can do from the spend.
So do businesses really care about carbon, or is it just about price?
I believe they do. If you'd asked me this question a few years ago, I might give a slightly different answer. But we've seen a change, I believe. And actually, with the rise of social media, the rise of other trends, such as organic, or people wanting to know where their food comes from field to fork, as a common phrase has been used, people do care about those things. And I think they will care about the businesses they deal with as consumers. Would I want to know if my supermarket has the gold standard when it comes to reducing our carbon footprint? Yes, I think I would. So I absolutely do think businesses will care about this and want to make sure that they are leading from a PR, from a corporate social responsibility, all about this. So I think it's absolutely bang on the money that there's a change coming. And I think it goes back to one of the earlier questions about reporting and good and bad, and should there be incentives or fines for people that don't. I think this absolutely plays into this. And I think there should be a naughty list publicised whereby we can all see the businesses that aren't on the bus to net zero. You know, it's absolutely crucial.
I think it's a fair question. I mean, it's something that's shifted a lot in the last decade, certainly. I think there's certainly an argument saying that there are a lot of businesses in the past that have said things merely to secure, you know, make themselves look good, greenwash effectively, without backing up, as I said before, with the proper thought about what that means. But I think increasingly we're starting to see that, you know, you can't separate business from CSR or sustainability or climate change. They are one and the same thing or two sides of the same coin. There is no business in a climate ravaged world. It can't exist. So yes, it is about price. Yes, it is about commerce because consumers want that and suppliers want that. But it is also about safeguarding our own business. And businesses increasingly recognize that they cannot really operate. They cannot secure the business contracts, the commerce, the consumers, the customers that they need without being genuinely serious about reaching net zero.
Stuart and Michael, this is probably more one for you. What support should businesses expect from their energy supplier? Do you think that services are evolving to cope with a changing consumer role?
In my view, all suppliers are different. They have different strengths, different approaches, different ways of working with customers. But if I can talk about Npower for the moment, it's long been our ambition to support customers in all aspects of energy. And indeed, that's what we've been setting ourselves up to do. And that's, in fact, what we've been doing for a number of years now. Interestingly, 10 years ago, we launched the Future Report that was primarily to forecast energy trends that we would see over the next 10 years. And we recently refreshed that report. And it was really interesting that those predictions in the main came true. And it was that, you know, we talked to a number of businesses back then, and we really gauged interest in the solutions area. And it was off the back of that it became a strong part of our strategy to be offering products, services, and solutions to help with energy efficiency, renewable generation, and to help organizations make that transition, albeit not necessarily for net zero carbon at the time, but that has certainly been the new trend that we've seen over the last couple of years. And it just so happens that what we've been building over the last 10 years already provides a lot of that capability. So from our perspective, the forward thinking on the strategy has really, really helped us offer the right products and services along that journey, but also more importantly than ever, right now, because of what we're seeing with climate emergencies and organizations declaring net zero carbon, it's come at the perfect time for us, really, that we've got all those capabilities to offer. So, in my view, a supply business now is not simply a supply business in the traditional sense of offering supply, billing, and customer service. All those things are clearly really, really important and is still a core part of our business. But now we offer a wider range of solutions, products, and services to our customers. And we try to fuse that so it's an overall integrated solution that the customer is working with us on. And in that sense, very much it's a partnership.
I think a business should expect their energy supplier to be a true partner. Gone are the days where it's all about, from our point of view as a supplier, just trying to sell energy at the highest cost. That's not the way that responsible business operates. We want to be a partner, and other suppliers will want to be a partner to businesses over the long term, over a longer term period. So that is right in the trenches with them, planning, being a sounding board, providing consultancy to so that business can make the right choices over the longer term. This is crucial for the whole survival of suppliers, in my view, is that we are there shoulder to shoulder with our business customers and providing that framework. Now, our services are evolving to cope with the changing landscape that net zero is going to provide. So it's not really about pushing certain products or certain technologies. It really is about the holistic plan and where that business needs to get to in its own individual right. There are a bunch of things, methods that we can employ, but really it's about consulting with a business, providing that framework, providing the support when they need it, really kind of educating them on the legislation landscape and the policy landscape that's going to happen, and being there as a true partner.
So to be serious about net zero, Michael, in your view, what can businesses do now and in the medium term?
Well, I believe there are actions that business can take now. First and foremost, The 101 is understand your energy data. If you're not measuring it, then how do you know what difference you're making? So absolutely, that's front and center of what you need to be doing. Number two, investing energy efficiency. And this can be really, really quick wins, such as lighting, air conditioning, and refrigeration. There's lots and lots that are really low-hanging fruit when it comes to energy efficiency. Number three, procure green fuel. Work with your energy provider to do this. And there are a number of ways which you can actually offset carbon emissions, and your energy provider will have a number of options around this. But potentially you could locate local energy generating sources, such as on-site generation, or get in touch and have a PPA, which is a power purchase agreement. But procuring green fuel is one of the kind of, again, low-hanging fruit, which you can do immediately. Four, consider on-site generation yourself to increase your own resilience. Businesses in general need to make sure that whatever the generation is chosen and is scoped appropriately, so that you find the right partner, the right technology, and whether that's kind of wind, solar, PV or biomass, it's right for you, right for your portfolio and right for your business. And number five, plan and plan again. Net zero is happening. Organizations that plan for the long term, make it a board level agenda point, are going to be the ones that succeed over their competitors. Look at the impact of new technologies. Look at the impact of subsidies. Look at the cost. Make sure that you have money to invest, because you'll see the payback. This is called a zero-sum game, which means essentially that by investing now, you'll make a bigger impact into your carbon emissions and essentially what you pay in the price of your fuel. So plan and plan again. Those are the five things I would say that businesses really need to do right away.
Absolutely. And Stuart, is there anything further from your perspective?
Well, I think to help organisations and governments achieve their net zero targets, I think quite a lot, really. You know, the landscape is quite wide in this area, and there's a lot that can be done and a lot that can be supported by government. And clearly, they've got some choices to make in each of those areas. I think sometimes the funding that is and has been available is not always that easy for organisations to navigate, and sometimes pathways aren't really that clear. But organisations are really looking to the government for leadership, particularly at this time and in this area. So the long delay on the proposed energy white paper would certainly be welcome to give some clarity on the future direction of net zero carbon and to shed light on, you know, the support that businesses can tap into. So the direction is really clear when it comes to net zero carbon. There are a number of ways of doing this. I think there are many options, and the journey for each business is different, in my view. I think a good starting point is to understand their greenhouse gas emissions and their environmental impact. I think that's absolutely fundamental. And this is the main purpose of schemes such as SECRA and ESOS. And so there are some companies that do this already and therefore have access to this information. And you can use this information to really set a baseline. So to make an interpretation on that baseline information, obviously you might have the skills within the organization, or you can engage with stakeholders and industry experts. And you can use that information to decide on a plan. I think for me, and for what I've seen working with businesses on net zero carbon, board level engagement is really essential to gain that commitment and to support the right action, you know, at all levels of an organization to make the necessary changes and to achieve those goals. And that then includes setting organization-wide objectives, setting out what those ambitions are, and then really backing that with some targets and some milestones that, you know, you can then talk about that at all levels of your organization. You can really make that a fundamental part of your organization's DNA, and then you can start to publicize that as well. So your customers and stakeholders and communities could play an active part in it and an active interest. This also enables organizations to consider the resources that are available to them, particularly around the financial resources and also the people they have and the brain power that goes along with making this happen. So you can use that information to set out your budgets, and then you can start to build an action plan. So I guess a few points in there. We would suggest installing some sort of measurement and verification system that also has data analytics that can provide granular level detail that enables a business to really understand the energy and energy-related processes across their energy ecosystem. So covering things like localized electricity consumption, gas, water, air, heat, waste, etc. And that can provide real insight into what is really going on within that organization. You can then use that information to highlight hotspots, which can help you then prioritize the big wins. And then you can relate that back to your budget and be in a position where you can start to really make some decisions. People that are involved in your production processes are really important. So you might want to look at sort of what we call behavioral change using maybe a carbon psychologist. And that helps identify the constructs in the way people think and act in terms of energy. And once you understand this, you can start to put some mitigation in place and help support people through that journey. And that could be then, for example, using an education program to increase the awareness of energy across your organization.
That's so key, getting the whole organisation behind net zero. Michael, what do you think?
I think what businesses need to do immediately is to recognise that we've got 30 years to deliver net zero. There are also biodiversity issues as well that are seriously under threat, and recognise where does your business fit within that? Is it going to be part of furthering and building that future economy? Is it going to operate within that economy in 30 years' time? And if so, where? And once you've sort of considered that and what your business can do to get there, you then need to set the trains in motion for getting there. And I think the current crisis and the recovery right now, there is also an advocacy role for businesses, in it, which businesses are increasingly playing, which is, you know, joining a trade association, speaking to consumers and customers, and joining with other businesses in pushing for the ambitious policy that's needed to get there. And more businesses are doing that. So there's a clear advocacy role. There's a clear recognition role about where businesses are going to be in the next 30 years. In the medium term, that means, of course, making sure that your business strategy is aligned with net zero. The next 10 years are going to be critical. We're getting there. There's going to be huge numbers of policy issues that need addressing over the next year. And, you know, being aware of those policies and being aware of the direction the economy is going to go in is going to be absolutely critical in the next 5 years. But I think it's, in the immediate term, being aware of where your business is going to be over the next 30 years. And in the medium term, I think it's going as quickly as possible and building the plans for getting there. It's not going to be an easy ride. There will be challenges along the way. And being honest about those challenges with fellow stakeholders and consumers is also critical. To be frank, I think it's a matter of we're embarking on a new era, a new world, and there's no set definitive strategy for getting there. We're going to be having to be milking in together to get there, and I think businesses recognize that. And I think a lot of working together and partnerships between businesses is also critical. But yeah, I think right now that the COVID-19 crisis has sort of shown that a new world, is a better world, is possible. You know, we have seen changes in the way that we run a society. So it's hopefully given companies a glimpse of a future that we can sort of grasp at, and maybe that's been helpful. But it does require a lot of work and a lot of heavy lifting in the medium term to get there.
A huge thank you to all of our guests for taking part in this podcast. Some really interesting points raised, and what has come through loud and clear is that businesses need to back net zero, both for their own future operational resilience and to support the wider UK decarbonisation ambition. For advice and information on how Empower Business Solutions can help your business on its road to net zero, visit www.energy-hq.co.uk or join the conversation using the hashtag #RoadToNetZero.